According to the terms of this secret treaty signed in January 1916, Jerusalem and most of what had been Ottoman Palestine were to come under international administration with the conclusion of the war. Until then, according to Picot, all conquered sections of Palestine were meant to be ruled by a joint Anglo-French administration. At this stage, however, the British had other ideas. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 173, The Entry of General Allenby. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. By December 9, 1917, General Allenby's army had blazed through Beersheba, triumphed in Megiddo, and was making its way to Jerusalem. As we discussed in our first episode of Jerusalem 365, the Ottoman mayor of Jerusalem, understanding that it would fall to him to surrender the city, went looking for someone in a British uniform to whom to surrender. And as I further described, several different surrenders took place, though the final and most famous, not involving the mayor, occurred 2 days later, on December 11th, 1917. General Edmund Allenby entered Jerusalem, deliberately doing so on foot in order to distinguish himself from the Kaiser, who, as we have seen, rode in atop a royal steed. Allenby issued a proclamation that in English read as follows, quote, "To the inhabitants of Jerusalem the Blessed, and the people dwelling in its vicinity, the defeat inflicted on the Turks by the troops under my command has resulted in the occupation of your city by my forces. I therefore here and now proclaim it to be under martial law, under which form of administration it will remain so long as military considerations make it necessary. However, lest any of you should be alarmed by reason of your experiences at the hands of the enemy who has retired, I hereby inform you that it is my desire that every person should pursue his lawful business without fear of interruption. Furthermore, since your city is regarded with affection by the adherents of three of the great religions of mankind, and its soil has been consecrated by the prayers and pilgrimages of devout people of those three religions for many centuries, I make it known to you that every sacred building, monument, holy spot, shrine, traditional site, endowment, pious bequest, or customary place of worship of whatever form of the three religions will be maintained and protected according to the existing customs and beliefs of those to whose faith they are sacred. Signed, Edmund Henry Hinman Allenby, General, December 1917, end quote. As many writers have noted, it is significant that this proclamation, translated into many languages, was issued in Hebrew, marking its use by a government in communicating to the Jews of the city. Allenby's time in Jerusalem on the 11th was brief, and it coincided with the coming onset that evening of Hanukkah. In a fascinating article, Lenny Ben David studied the photographs of the day and tells us the following about what occurred after Allenby's departure. Quote, "After General Allenby departed from the old city, officers and the photographer, George Westmoreland, made their way to the Western Wall. Two pictures in the British Imperial War Museum show Jewish worshippers and British officers who stood at the narrow alley's northern entrance. Westmoreland's pictures were taken at the quote-unquote Jews' Wailing Wall on December 11, 1917. The shadows indicate that the day was getting late. The first night of Hanukkah was approaching. The first picture at the Kotel," Lenny Ben David continues, "is fascinating. Upon enlarging the photograph, one can see an officer holding what appears to be a Torah scroll. Between the soldiers and the wall is a small table, a curiosity considering that until the day before, the Turkish masters of the city banned all furniture at the Jewish site. Was the table there to hold a Hanukkah menorah? Apparently, that was its purpose," end quote. So Lenny Ben David writes. Of course, as we will see in later episodes, there will be eventually, from the Jews of Jerusalem, deep disappointment with and ultimately open rebellion against the rules imposed by the British at the Kotel, at the Western Wall. At this moment, December 11th, especially given the Balfour Declaration, there was, for Jerusalem's Jews, much hope. And, in retrospect, pondering the calendrical coinciding with Hanukkah allows us to gain further perspective as we consider the sweep of Jewish history and world history. A fascinating account about what followed Allenby's departure from Jerusalem can be found in the memoir of a man who was there when Allenby walked into the city, a man that would become even more famous for his exploits in the Middle East than Allenby himself, T. E. Lawrence, a.k.a. Lawrence of Arabia. Lawrence describes in his memoir the lunch that followed the formal surrender of Jerusalem, a lunch that included the counterpart of Mark Sykes in the Sykes-Picot Agreement of 1916, François-Georges Picot. Lawrence writes, quote, "The aides pushed about and from great baskets drew a lunch, varied, elaborate, and succulent. On us fell a short space of quiet, to be shattered by Monsieur Picot, the French political representative, permitted by Allenby to march beside Clayton in the entry, who said in his fluting voice, 'And tomorrow, my dear general, I will take the necessary steps to set up civil government in this town. It was the bravest word on record. A silence followed, as when they opened the seventh seal in heaven. Salad, chicken mayonnaise, and foie gras sandwiches hung in our wet mouths, unmunched, while we turned to Allenby and gaped. Even he seemed for the moment at a loss. We began to fear that the idol might betray a frailty, but his face grew red. He swallowed, his chin coming forward in the way we loved, whilst he said grimly, "In the military zone, the only authority is that of the commander-in-chief, myself." "But Sir Edward Grey, stammered Monsieur Picot. He was cut short. "Sir Edward Grey referred to the civil government, which will be established, when I judge, that the military situation permits." End quote. Why was Picot referring to the British First World War leader, Edward Grey, and why would he have assumed involvement of the French in the governing of the sacred city? Shai Ben-Ari, writing for the National Library of Israel, in an article that was republished in the Times of Israel, notes that Picot's assumption was linked to the original Sykes-Picot agreement. According to that original understanding, much of the most famous parts of the Holy Land were to be internationally maintained. If this was the case, meaning if that was Picot's assumption, then this was the moment that Allenby made it absolutely clear that the Holy Land would be governed by the British alone, that it would effectively become part of the British Empire. Ben-Ari writes as follows, quote, "According to the terms of this secret treaty signed in January 1916, Jerusalem and most of what had been Ottoman Palestine were to come under international administration with the conclusion of the war. Until then, according to Picot, all conquered sections of Palestine were meant to be ruled by a joint Anglo-French administration. At this stage, however, the British had other ideas. After all, they had fought and bled in this region for years. There were major setbacks along the way, including two military defeats at Gaza. They would suffer over 60,000 battle casualties, with nearly 17,000 killed over the course of the campaign. It is worth noting that much of the rank and file came from the far reaches of the British Empire, including India, South Africa, Australia, and New Zealand. The French contribution in Palestine was minimal in comparison. The British had no intention of now ceding control of the great prize because of an agreement that was not even public knowledge. With Allenby's declaration of martial law, any serious talk of joint or international administration was put off indefinitely. British martial law effectively remained in place until the summer of 1920, when a civil administration was finally established under the British mandate with no French or international involvement. The brief and rather informal diplomatic tussle described above by Lawrence may very well have changed the course of Middle Eastern history." End quote. It is a fascinating reflection, interestingly pointing to a passage in Lawrence's memoir, and it highlights the point with which we began this series, that many countries and empires have dreamed to take a role in governing Jerusalem. And this historical fact, as we suggested, is paralleled in the many attempts of the mayor of Jerusalem in 1917 to surrender the city. For the city of Jerusalem has been surrendered so many times, taken over by empire after empire. But it is therefore all the more striking to think about the small Hanukkah lamp kindled at the Kotel on the evening following Allenby's entry, a beacon in the night reminding all of the eternal Jewish connection to this sacred city, a reflection of a sacred link and a faith that was to be vindicated in the future. It was in our first episode that we described how in December of 2017 that the denizens of Jerusalem reenacted Allenby's entry into Jerusalem on its 100th anniversary, complete with men attired in World War I British uniforms. And reading Allenby's original pronouncement was the heir to his title, the current Viscount Allenby. The episode described how one can see on a video taken of the moment that an actor playing General Allenby himself said to the then mayor of Jerusalem near Barakat, 100 years ago, I received a key to this wonderful city, and I think that after 100 years, it's time that I returned it. And he added, it's a bit rusty. The audience laughed appreciatively, but the proper reaction I suggested is not amusement but awe, for the actor was essentially echoing words that the Almighty Lord of History has essentially said to the Jewish people in our age. I think it's time I return the keys of Jerusalem to you. From this perspective, General Allenby's arrival into Jerusalem is another stage in the story of this sacred city, a story with incredible events yet to come. This is Mayor Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.